Today with Claire Byrne on RTÉ Radio 1, sponsored by Sullis. Finish school and not sure what's next? Explore further education and training options at thisisfet.ie.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTÉ Radio 1.
Now, the European Commissioner for Financial Stability, Financial Services and the Capital Markets Union, Mairead McGuinness, is here. Good morning to you, Commissioner.
Good morning.
Thank you for coming in. Now, you were just giving the keynote address in the last few minutes at a gathering this morning marking 30 years of the EU single market. That has been a significant benefit to Ireland, I think most people would say, but you're saying there's more needs to happen and to be done.
Yeah, absolutely. And also marking that we'll be 50 years in the European Union on the 1st of January. I mean, the single market is just free access, where we're not and haven't made enough progress in a number of areas, but particularly in finance, because a lot of people would ask me, why can't I take a loan out in another member state where interest rates might be lower? So we're doing a lot of work to try and make sure we have free movement of capital, because that is one of the things that is part of the single market. And I suppose the financial crisis interrupted reform and restructuring in the banking sector. The banks are now more nationalised across Europe than they were before the financial crisis. So work on banking union is still happening, but not quick enough. But we're trying to nudge it forward. And indeed, the president of the Eurogroup, Pascal Dunne, who is also involved in that. On capital markets union, we're doing a lot of work as well. I mean, it sounds like a very, you know, heavy, dry topic, but actually access to finance is huge for SMEs and for businesses and for citizens.
Okay, especially right now. Now, the last time you were here, we were talking about the EU's efforts to alleviate high gas prices. There wasn't much movement, as I recall, at that time. What's been happening? Are you getting any further down the line?
I suppose what's interesting is look at the gas market yesterday. I haven't looked today, but prices had come down. What I think that shows is that when Europe makes signals in the direction of trying to tame the energy market, the market responds. I think that's important. We've done an awful lot. I think sometimes we forget what we've achieved. So I think when I was here, I'm not sure what the figure was, but now we have 92% storage in gas for the winter. So I think our preparations for this winter are good. But of course, we're now trying to plan for next year and beyond in terms of energy. So we're still having a discussion around pricing and what mechanism might be used to try and tame energy prices. We are going to restructure the electricity market. So this idea of decoupling gas from electricity sounds easy. It's not overnight, and that's a work in progress. In my area, I've been trying to put in place measures, and we already have announced them, to allow more liquidity when energy companies are buying forward and hedging and in that complex areas so that they don't run into problems. So while it might sound as not a lot is happening, and even the recent meeting of leaders has moved forward. So the idea of joint purchase. Now, companies buy energy, it's not governments, but clearly there will be movements around how much we might collectively buy to allow companies come together on the market. So in other words, two buyers versus 20 buyers, I mean, have more impact.
But people will remember here that back at budget time, Micheál Martin said, we have the firepower in Ireland to deal with this in the short to medium term. And that's coming by way of the energy subventions that people will be getting over the winter. But then there was a suggestion that we're waiting for the EU to help out after that. And that help doesn't seem to be coming if we are relying on the markets to correct themselves under threat of some sort of cap, which doesn't seem to be coming down the tracks at all.
Well, no, I think we spoke previously about the idea of making and ensuring that the fossil fuel sector that would take some of that profit and recycle it around member states, equally around those energy providers who aren't relying on fossil fuels, who are making windfall profits. So that is an accepted mechanism, and that will allow a redistribution of profits, which are very high in some parts of the energy market, to be redistributed within member states. So the idea that member states are waiting for Europe centrally to do something, I think is a misinterpretation. I think Europe is doing things collectively, including around those measures to allow a redistribution of profits within the energy system. I think it's also very true to say that we are unlikely to go back to low energy prices at all, because the weaponizing of energy by Russia. It's been remarkable that we have managed to source other energy suppliers globally, LNG, that we have managed to reduce our energy consumption. The piece that we need to work very hard on is investment in renewables. So issues like planning permissions are always complicated across the member states. And of course, the renewable supply chain has some problems itself. And that's future.
That's a medium to long-term plan. And there's another meeting, isn't there? Energy ministers are meeting in November to discuss this block-wide gas price cap. Mm-hmm. Germany and the Netherlands seem to be holding out on that one.
Well, there was a lot of discussion around the table. I mean, we're moving forward with some ideas, so some concepts as to how that would work. So it's one thing to propose it, it's then to see what mechanisms. So I'm working on this with the Energy Commissioner about what actually pieces of legislation or what regulation would you need to allow that to happen. There was a lot of discussion because there were concerns that some member states have different energy mix. So there was really trying to find a way forward that everybody could move on. And I think we found that space. Notwithstanding the different energy mixes, because overall, once you have a supplier that's out of the market, remember we were getting 40% of our gas from Russia, mm-hmm. and now it's down to 9%. But if that goes, that adds to our problems. So we've managed to have some stability. I mean, what's happening, and this is horrible for households and for businesses, is that energy prices are just escalated. And we're trying to, and indeed through our state aid mechanism, countries can also provide support to both households, targeted support and temporary support, as we would say it, through the state aid regime. So I think that we have done a great deal. And when it is put together, it has allowed Europe to access energy, because there were fears at one point that we would not be able to fill our stores because they were empty because Russia had weaponized
gas. Are you saying, when you say space has been found, do you believe that it is possible for the EU to introduce a price cap?
Yes, and what I think is you need, what is the definition? I think we need to understand that when you're introducing a price cap, there still will be a market price. So what mechanisms need to be put in place around who pays what and how? So it isn't as if Europe can announce this is the price we will pay and no more. We are signalling to the market our intention here. That has its impacts, because remember what has happened over the last month since this horrible war is uncertainty. So when markets are uncertain, there's huge volatility. So it went from last January, it's now gone skyrocketed. It came down yesterday to, as I understand it, for gas, below or around what it was in January. So we have given
but
market signals.
Aren't there more sanctions coming in now on the crude energy?
That will come
products.
on oil. But just to finish around the gas and the capping mechanism, I think that it's perhaps to try and explain the complexity of introducing this. And you can't move unless everybody is comfortable with making progress. And I think there is now an understanding, particularly for the next year, that we will need to see less competition between countries looking for energy, looking for gas. So more cohesion as to how we would source gas. But we have to do that through the companies that are actually buying the gas. So there's a huge amount of work going on every single day, not only in my area, but others across the Commission, to try and tame energy markets, which isn't easy when there's huge uncertainty, and also to support member states as to what they can use around state aid to support their businesses. Because one of our big concerns is that if energy prices continued in that upward trajectory, that our companies become uncompetitive and can't actually operate.
Well, we're seeing it already with closures happening, particularly in the hospitality sector. Mm-hmm. But from what you're saying, I don't think we need wait really for this price cap to happen anytime soon. I mean, it doesn't seem to be, listening to you this morning, to be imminent, certainly.
Yeah, but I think it was never, certainly our understanding, that from one day to another we would announce a price cap and the world would be, all would be well. This is one element of an overall approach to how we react to the fact that a major supplier, which we were over-reliant on, has pulled the plug. And how do we keep the lights on and then look and plan for the future? So there isn't an overnight solution to this. I mean, I wish there were, because if there were, we'd have found it. But I think all of the steps we've taken, some of them are invisible, but they impact the market, are towards saying that Europe means business, that we want to make sure that we don't compete too much with one another when we're out there buying supplies, and that we look at mechanisms around capping, understanding that the market also has its place. I mean, there are kind of very difficult issues here for us, because in one sense, high energy prices will force us to do what we might and probably should have done years ago, which is invest in renewables. We've had a deep shock to our system now. And I know that there is a lot of private investment which will flow towards renewables, but it won't answer the problem of pricing today. And I think we have to be very open and frank about that.
I want to move on because we have a short amount of time before the news. Now, when it comes to Ukrainian refugees, Ireland, the Irish government has clearly sent out the message that certainly in the short term, Ireland is pretty much full. Are we allowed to do that under the EU Temporary Protection Directive?
Well, that directive allows that member states look after Ukrainians, give them the protection of the directive. The Taoiseach on Taoiseach, Micheál Martin, spoke this morning, and I thought his words were very profound insofar as he said, look, we have opened our country because it is the right thing to do. We have been very supportive as a country around sanctions. We've been one of the countries most strong on that. And we have managed to bring in 55,000 Ukrainian citizens. It's our duty to do that. But that has happened and it has worked well. Their difficulty now is this concern around where, if more, and people want to come to Ireland. And Taoiseach did say this morning that we have to, you know, make a further push. So I think there will be and is a lot of work going on across government, as I understand it.
You know, when that announcement was made by government that there would be a problem with accommodation, there was a drop seen in the last couple of days in the number of Ukrainians coming in. What would happen if other countries did that? If they looked at Ireland, they said, well, look, they said that they're full. The number of Ukrainians coming in fell back. Can you imagine if Germany said that, if Italy said that?
Yeah, but I don't think you're quoting correctly. I don't think Ireland said we're full. I think what has been said, as I've read it, is that we have some pressures in the system.
We've said we cannot guarantee you accommodation if you come in the medium term until we get some sort of solution sorted out.
Yeah, but that's a slight nuance. I mean, I can't and don't speak for the Irish government. But my understanding is that huge efforts are now being made so that we can fulfil our obligations. And what we want to do, which is to look after and accommodate Ukrainian citizens. Yeah. And I think that that will be done. You have to remember that, and this could increase because of what Russia is doing at the moment, but we have, as the last figures, I think around 9 million Ukrainian citizens have actually left. I mean, that is an enormous amount of people. And sadly, they're the ones that suffer, usually women and children leaving and leaving their men behind. And by and large, that has worked well across the European Union. Clearly, most have gone to their neighbouring countries. So I think, you know, there is pressure. But my understanding from listening to Taoiseach this morning was that every effort is and will be made to meet our obligations. Mm. And also because, as Taoiseach Micheál Martin said, because we want to do that as an Irish, as a community.
But at a commission level, there must be a concern that other countries are going to reach the threshold here when you're talking about 9 million people moving. Who knows what the winter is going to bring?
Well, I think that's the point. And I mean, again, none of us know, because the only person who does is Vladimir Putin. And there is no doubt he is targeting both the energy supply sector in Ukraine. So they're being devastated. And that will force people to leave. I mean, it is, if you like, using people to fight his war by forcing them out. Now, there's no way we can stand at a border and say thus no further, because we have to accommodate. We have made a commitment. And across the member states, there is a commitment to do everything that we can. So I think you could be overwhelmed as, you know, when you think about what might happen. But I mean, last January, none of us knew this was ahead of us. And I suppose we're now in October. And so far, despite difficulties, and I'm aware of the difficulties here, we have managed, and I think 55,000 Ukrainians are in Ireland, they're in our schools, they're working. And I mean, I think we should also give credit to those who are in the background trying to manage that system.
Okay. Just finally, interest rates expected to go up at lunchtime today by 0.75 of a percentage point. How high do you think they're likely to go? Some speculation around 3.5%.
I really wouldn't even comment if I did know, and I don't. I mean, the European Central Bank, they're in independent and they decide. But there is no doubt that we are in an era of inflation and interest rates. I actually remarked at the conference I've just come from that I remember the 80s when we had both and they were considerably higher, and we do not want to go back there again. So what central banks are doing is trying to get back to that 2% of target around inflation, and that's why interest rates are going up. But clearly, given the cost of living pressures, the energy price, and now mortgage and loan repayments, this is pressure for both citizens and businesses. My job is financial stability, so I leave the work of interest rates to the ECB. I think what's really important is, despite this climate of huge uncertainty, after COVID and into a war, our financial system is fairly robust. That's not to say that what might come could present us with problems. It doesn't keep me awake at night currently, but I'm very aware that in times of huge uncertainty and fluctuation, we have to be mindful of maintaining financial stability, because we know what happened when it didn't, we didn't hold together in the past.
Commissioner, thank you very much for coming in today. That's Commissioner Mairead McGuinness. Let's go a little late to the newsroom now and to Brian Jennings.